I'm Stephanie Wilson, and you're listening to Freedom Over Fascism.
A lot of youths got up, told their personal stories of how they were struggling and how a book saved their life. And, you know, afterwards, you could see these kids just so empowered. They just felt like they had a say, you know, and letting them know that they have those opportunities is huge.
Hi, friends. Recently on this podcast, we've been talking to our guests about putting out good values-based messaging, making the voter the hero of the story, supporting and training young candidates, and focusing our efforts locally. My conversation with Julie Fernot and Lama Hayburn, co-founders of the Rural Organizing Initiative in Arizona, brings together all of these imperatives. They work with community members and students to register people to vote, to end the culture wars in local city councils and school boards, and they teach people that their votes matter. In fact, as they'll tell us, in 2022, the new Democratic Attorney General won her race by 240 votes out of 4 million votes cast. Julie and Lama turned out so many new voters in their area, they know that their efforts made a big difference in a big way for a statewide candidate. If you're in rural America or anywhere else, their ideas about how to reach students, how to bring people together, and how to make real change locally are worth listening to. There's a lot here that can work anywhere in the country, rural, urban, suburban, and everything in between. Please share this podcast with one person you know out there in the real world and support us at freedomoverfascism.us. If you're looking to reach an activist audience, we have sponsorship opportunities as well. Please enjoy this conversation with Julie and Lama. They're doing great work. Lama and Julie, welcome to Freedom Over Fascism.
Thank you. It's great being out here.
We're very excited.
I am so excited to talk to you guys. Organizing for rural voters is really something that we haven't talked enough about on this podcast. So do you mind introducing yourselves and your organization and what you do?
My name is Lama Hayburn. I am one of the co-founders of Rural Organizing Initiative, which is an organization, a 501c4 nonprofit dedicated to really turning out rural voters, but also providing support for some of those super local nonpartisan races like city council and school board, which we believe, you know, if local issues are what you should turn out for, then you're going to turn out for your school board and your city council if you know what's going on. So we try to let people know what's going on.
And we also, I think, another focus for us is voter registration and especially youth voter registration. In rural areas, a lot of young people just aren't very engaged. They feel like, you know, politics doesn't affect me. So we try to, you know, get them involved with each other. And we've got a lot of little programs we're working on that are starting to show some success. So we're excited.
And what's your name?
Oh, and I'm Julie. I'm sorry. I'm Julie Fernat. It's nice to be on the show. We're really happy to talk about this.
Well, I am really interested in your outreach and what you're doing to engage the young voters. Why don't we start there? Because everyone's trying to reach the young voters and some are having more success than others. So how's that going?
I'm going to say that our biggest program, and we want to share this with everybody, please steal our ideas. Any ideas we share on this program, we encourage everybody to steal. I feel like an event we did last night really speaks to what we're doing. We're seeing our groups skew younger and younger as we go, but it's because we're trying to also support them in the areas that matter. We attended a school board meeting last night where the high school board was looking at banning some books. And through social media, through just getting out into the community and talking to young people, you know, we let a lot of them know what was going on. And the turnout was huge. And it was an emotional event. And it was beautiful. Just person after person, you know, a lot of youths got up, told their personal stories of how they were struggling and how a book saved their life. And how important those things were. Almost everybody ended up going off script. There were lots of tears. You know, people talked about things they'd never talked about publicly. Lots of hugs. Afterwards, you could see these kids just so empowered. They just felt like they had a say. And letting them know that they have those opportunities is huge. Letting them know they can go to city council meeting, that their voice does matter, has been really big. Again, they're not going to want to get involved on, you know, Senate and presidential races because they feel so disconnected. That doesn't affect their daily life. But when we talk to them about their school and their town, then it connects.
So we designed these voter registration t-shirts with a QR code that can be scanned from your phone. Because in Arizona, you can register online statewide. And so we originally thought that these t-shirts were going to be like, we would wear them and go out and register young people. And that worked a little bit, but we really found that a real success was giving the shirts to young people to wear themselves. And when they were around, just their friends and their family, they registered everyone they knew. So, you know, we've really found the value in making the shirts, but then just giving them to the people that are around the voters that we want.
I think in Arizona, and Lama, you can tell me if I got this right, less than 25% of 18 to 26-year-olds are registered to vote. But of the ones that are registered, 86% show up to vote. So if we can get them registered, we can get that turnout. And it can make a, you know, obviously in Arizona, it's 10,000, 11,000 votes.
It really can make or break an election. So what you said about the young people coming out to the school board meeting is really inspiring. A couple months ago, I spoke to some people in Indiana where they were also trying to ban books. And they had a lot of people coming and talking about why teen access to books is really important. And we had some young adult authors on to talk about why they wrote the books in the first place. Can you share a few stories, without names, of course, of how they expressed that books were changing their lives?
One of the ones that really stood out to me was a woman who had originally arrived wanting to speak in favor of the book ban. And then just from hearing people's stories, talking about how reading a book about deep things like incest and rape and, you know, these experiences that you don't necessarily get taught about, but it still happens to kids and they need to know that it's wrong. And these books help them learn what's happening to them and that it's wrong. And so this woman got up and she said that she really changed her mind because of hearing the people that were willing to share deeply personal trauma experiences in this public setting. It was really inspiring.
It really was. It kind of grew as each person kind of shared more. It sort of opened it up for the room. And there were a couple of, you know, more than one that got up to say, when I was young, I was suffering from incest and being told this was just normal. And then I started to learn about these things and learn it was wrong. Or just thought, there was one girl said she was raised, you know, in a cult and she was trafficked. And she had no idea that there was a way to escape until she had read about those things and learn to do that. And actually, she now works in trafficking and prevention. Person after person talked about how they couldn't find their way until they found it in a book. And they had no support. They had nobody telling them that they were okay until they saw that in a book. And they were just very emotional. And it felt so honored to be in the room with everybody at that point. It was amazing.
It was really cool that we had a whole array of people, from current students to former students to parents of students to teachers to faculty to community members, librarians, former teachers and other schools. And it was really impressive. And there were people that talked about, because part of what they were targeting with books were LGBTQ content. There were students that got up and talked about how difficult it was for them to be queer at this school because they weren't getting support except from books in the library that told them it was okay to be what they are.
That is incredibly powerful. Do you feel that what happened at this school board meeting might give you the opportunity to help other districts in the same way in your general area?
Yeah, and I will tell you, there's a little more to the story from last night. We have a project within Rural Organizing Initiative called the Penny Peace Project. And it's our way of responding to the culture wars. Because one of the things that we found happening in small towns in our area was that the culture wars were being waged in city council meetings, you know, librarians were being attacked and, you know, drag shows were being attacked. So we were spending a lot of time reacting and dealing with these issues. And a lot of times when you attended these meetings, you know, there'd be over an hour back and forth from two sides. And it was, you know, somewhat traumatic. I mean, it would take a day or two to kind of get over the trauma of it and to get back to what you were doing. So we realized that this was creating a huge distraction. We were spending a lot of time in culture wars and we weren't spending time registering voters and organizing people and, you know, doing the hard work of election. At a local city council meeting, we, you know, it was one of those meetings where it's going back and forth. Things were getting kind of heated. And a woman got up and made a statement and she brought up a local citizen who had passed away 2 years ago named Penny Smith. And Penny did so many good works. I mean, she did work with the Humane Shelter and burn unit kids and foster kids and, you know, LGBTQ youth and just so many things in her life. And she's been so honored all over town. There's little things that say, be like Penny. Every year on the anniversary of her death, the town gathers. I mean, she's very beloved. And a woman got up and said that she knew Penny Smith and Penny did a lot of good works, but Penny brought drag shows to Cottonwood and that she wish Penny could come back from the dead and tell us how God had judged her because, you know, in her opinion, Penny had gone to hell. And the reaction was so visceral. Within an hour, there were over 200 comments on a Facebook page and people were outraged and they were like, you know, we're going to find her and run her over. And, you know, we just thought we had to get a lid on it. And you know, that's not what Penny would have wanted. So at the next city council meeting, we had 55 people in a line. And when it came time for the call to the public to speak, they give you 3 minutes. And the other thing was we were torturing our city council. They would have to sit and listen sometimes for hours to this back and forth. And it was just not doing anything. So one after the other in a line, first we had somebody make an opening statement about Penny. Then everybody came through the line and they didn't use their 3 minutes. They just said one sentence. They said, I'm here because I support the Penny Peace Project. Put a penny on the podium. And they pinned a ribbon onto a jacket that I was wearing. And then I was the last speaker. And I said that we're no longer going to participate in these culture wars, that we will watch what they're doing. We will send them emails with our opinions and we'll send letters to the editors. And come November, we're going to be voting. So we're going to pay attention, but we're not going to show up anymore and do this back and forth because it's just not getting anybody anywhere. We didn't know how it would go. We crossed our fingers. It worked beautifully. The next city council meeting, they sent two people. The one after that, I don't even think they had anybody speak. To this day, if somebody gets up with it, it's been like one or two on one side and one or two on the other, and that's it. It's over. So the city council was really grateful to us because we calmed that down. We did plan to do a Penny Peace Project at the event at the school board last night, a different type of event. It would have involved books and a different statement. And they kind of changed the rules so we wouldn't be able to do that. And It's kind of funny because it would have been a very maybe 15, 20 minute event and everybody would have left. But because they changed the rules, everybody had to go individually, use their 3 minutes. It went for 2 hours and it turned into the most powerful, I think, honestly, the most powerful evening of my life. It was raw and emotional and just had so much that came out of it. And it you know, at least one person got up and said, yeah, listening to this changed the way I view this. So even if you just change one mind, I think that's just huge.
Right. So, and if it changing one mind and also engaging those young people so that they see that what they have to say makes a difference.
Yeah.
And I have heard a similar statistic that not so many young people are registered, but when they are, they vote in a very high numbers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you expanding beyond your local area to engage more young people, or do you have partners in other areas of Arizona or the country, or how are you reaching out further?
We're fairly new, so, you know, a lot of concentration has been local. We are trying to reach out. It's kind of funny because you mentioned Indiana earlier, and I was wondering what part of Indiana you were in or talking to, because that's where I originated, and, you know, my original political work was there. So, you know, I still reach out to people there, share ideas. We do have people around the state that we do coordinate with. Honestly, it's kind of funny because our local town, we're sort of leading the way in the crazy right now. Alamba, you can maybe talk a little about what's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a full year, basically, from last year to now, of just these culture wars, right? Of them trying to ban books, ban drag shows, redefine adult entertainment to exclude anything LGBTQ, trying to fire librarians because they had an LGBTQ display. Like, it's really been just, all the stuff that you hear about nationwide has really been happening here locally in the Verde Valley. And as Julie said, like, one reason we were able to kind of pull away from being sucked into those culture wars is because of the Pen and Peace Project. And it was not just successful in the city of Cottonwood where we did it, but actually in the city of Camp Verde, which is just a little ways away. They were reviewing a draft ordinance that was submitted by a citizen. And when they did the vote on it, the citizens that submitted the ordinance didn't even show up. So, and it failed because it was lawsuit city. But yeah, it just showed that, it's kind of like with any bully, right? Once you stand up for yourself, they start to fold because they're not used to not dealing with people who are able to stand up for themselves.
Well, and another thing I thought you might talk about was we also have several recalls going right now. Our city council has a councilman who has been very aggressively sexually harassing city employees. Our council didn't vote to condemn them. I think the recall petitions, too, is helping people see that they don't just have to accept what happens. That if they, if they see something, they think it's wrong, that they have a voice, that they can stand up and say, this is wrong. This person shouldn't be representing us if this is what they believe in. So feel like we're getting a little bit of a reputation for recalls, but they're very egregious. We have 3 recalls at the moment that we feel need to go through.
So. Yeah, we've got 2 city council members and 1 school board member. And I think one of the interesting things about telling people about the recalls, too, is that the number of signatures you need is based on the percentage that voted in the last election. And of course, a lot of city councils and school boards, they don't have a lot of votes. For our lowest number of signatures, it's only 360. Like, that's pretty doable. Our highest one is more like 2,000. So we've got a range in there. But it just kind of goes to show you like how important it is to vote in those elections, because otherwise, the percentage is really small because people don't turn out. And a lot of people just don't know or don't have the time to research who are these people that are running for school board or city council. They don't have a party by their name. So it's harder to just, stick them into a category. Which means you kind of got to have the time to research, and a lot of people don't. So part of what we try to do is get the word out about who are these people that are fighting to preserve our democracy, that are fighting to not ban books, to, make sure that all LGBTQ people in the community feel safe. And, if we can get the word out, I think people, especially young people, will turn out to vote for them because this is happening in their backyard, and no one likes that happening in their backyard,
And also, when people vote at the local level, and there's also state level and national level people on that ballot, that bolsters the percentage who are voting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny you say that because that's something we talk about a lot. People talk about down ballot. They're always like, if we get a good candidate for president, then everybody down ballot is going to, benefit from that. And so they call it coattails. So we're calling it a top hat. Our vision is a top hat. We want people to show up for those local races and have it move up ballot to them. We also try to cross the ballot because we feel every race is equally important. So we say across the ballot more often.
That is so important. I think the coattails idea is fine if people have any idea who the people down ballot are, or if there are people actually running for races, which is really, really important. But your idea, where you make sure that good people are running at every level, is what is going to bring the votes for statewide and national office, because those are more known people. So if they're already voting for the people at the most local levels, they're likely to know who their district level people are and their state level people are. And, you know, it's a presidential year, so
yeah,
they'll know.
And I'll give you an example of how that worked. So in Arizona, we had our statewide offices up for election last year in 2022. And our attorney general is now a Democratic attorney general for the first time in a very long time. And she won by 280 votes.
Out of 40.
Yeah. And that a lot of that came from our state legislative district, because we live in a what's considered a non-competitive district, right? So a lot of times candidates don't get run. There's not a lot of campaigning. It's just kind of, well, they have it. What can we do? But in 2022, we did have a slate of candidates that ran together under the Clean Elections Commission, which I don't know that every state has that, but Arizona has a pretty cool system where you get government money to run an election after you get contributions and stuff. You know, it's a whole system. But we had a slate of candidates that ran for the state legislature, and they campaigned hard. They knocked a lot of doors personally and with volunteers. And they turned out people that would not have voted otherwise, because it feels like there's no point in voting in this district if there's no one to vote for. So it really, and those 280 votes really came from our county. So it was pretty cool to see that in action.
Well, I think that's one of the most important things that I've been involved in and that can be done in either red, MAGA captured and battleground states and the states that are moving from one to the other, is that you've got to contest every race. It's great that your candidates got funding from the state. That's not the case in a lot of places.
Yeah.
As long as they understand that what they're doing is turning out votes and that they might not win, that is golden. In some states, it's really hard to find candidates.
You know, that's another focus we have is candidate support. Anything that has, that's partisan, that has DNR, there are generally support systems. But once you get down to the local level and, you know, city council, school boards, they're nonpartisan. So they can't get support from parties because that's not what they're designed to do. And there's really just no mechanism. So people are like kind of on their own. They're like, yeah, I'll file, I'll get signatures, but I don't really know what to do after that. I'll get my friends and family. So we're trying as an organization to be like, we can be an organization that supports progressive local candidate. And we do that by providing education. And that can be open to any candidates, where we can teach you, you know, what's involved with running a campaign, what's effective, you know, what you're going to have to look forward to, and educating the voters as well. But a lot of candidates that weren't willing to run, you know, we're seeing a lot more interest in these local. Last election, the city council didn't even have enough candidates to run to fill the office. So basically, if you signed up to run, you would win, because we had, I think, four openings and three candidates or something. So this time we've got multiples over the open. And now, you know, people are trying to suss out who wants to run. But it's a great thing to see. But it's because they know that there's going to be support, that they'll have, you know, someone they can turn to and ask questions and get help if they need help setting things up or learning things.
Mm-hmm. And it's also because they see that it makes a difference in people's lives and maybe their own life. And I think that is the key. I talked recently to Mark Riddle, who is the president of Future Majority. It's a national PAC that does a ton of research, like focus group, talking to people, qualitative research. And they are dedicated to making voters the hero of the story.
Yes.
And I think that's something that so many candidates just don't get. They're all about me, me, me. This is what I'm going to do. This is my biography. But actually, you need to say, okay, this is what is going on with you in your life. And this is how we can, you know, do it together. And I think that is a far more effective way of doing things. You asked what part of Indiana I'm from. I'm from Lexington, Massachusetts, that part of Indiana. I'm actually not in Indiana at all. I adopted Indiana. But in the last month, I've had a couple of people who are running for city council, which is called the select board here, and school committee in a different town. And they also, they don't even know the first thing. So I was like, okay, well, what does the select board do? Because I know nobody in the town knows what it is. And when is that election? And why, what do you do that they didn't? And those are things that they almost hadn't thought about telling people, but that's going to be, that's going to be the basis.
What is the time commitment is a question we have. Like, you know, is this a full-time job? Do I do it once a month? I mean, they just, the information just hasn't been widely shared. So, you know, that's what we're trying to do is be that resource and show them what, you know, what would be expected. And it's been really helpful. It's, and again, and sharing this in other cities, we're trying to get everybody to kind of focus on it.
Well, reaching out and if you can create partnerships across the state, it's so important. And in a lot of states that haven't been competitive in a long time, working together is kind of a foreign concept. How have you found it?
We've had some mixed results. We have some partners that are, you know, really eager to work with us and just, you know, really eager to take any idea and bring it to their community because, you know, that's their goal is to turn out their community. We've had other groups that, you know, we had a little bit of a rougher time with that don't necessarily want to work together. But, you know, I think part of it is just finding that path where we can all coexist. And also, like, we're all working towards the same goal, right? Like, we all want to win in November. And we want to win because we know that when progressive candidates win, they enact policies that improve people's lives. So, you know, we're all going towards the same goal. We're all trying to work together. And, you know, sometimes it gets a little difficult. Sometimes people forget it a little. Mm-hmm. But it's just so essential for us to, you know, make that effort to just focus on the goal. Because at the end of the day, whatever petty drama is going on doesn't matter. What matters is who turns out to vote and how that election goes.
You know, it's funny. I thought you were asking a different question, but I have a good answer for this one, too. Even on a local level, the working together, we consider ourselves progressive. You know, we don't put a D or an R in front of our names. We just feel like we want, you know, what everybody wants, progress. And we have had people from both parties, as well as independents, that have approached us and want to work together. And I've sat in a room recently with very prominent Democrats, Republicans, and an independent that want to kind of fix what's going on in our town. Our town is suffering right now. The newspaper articles are drama filled, you know, scathing things about what's going on, and people are getting really upset. But I loved sitting in that room with everybody saying, you know, what we want is what we've had. You know, it's a town that normally comes together, really cares about each other, and just, you know, we're the heart of wine country here, and everybody just wants to have fun and relax, and it's gotten the other way. But I love that instead of developing as a us and them thing, there's just a large group that the coalition from every party that wants to come together and do the best for the town. And seeing that, you know, if we can see that expand, that's what needs to happen, you know, is you're not choosing teams. We're all on the same team. And it's been incredible to watch.
That's really inspiring. And I think that that's very rare, but probably not as rare in small communities where people know each other and people are flexible in their thinking. I mean, I think if you have a lot of hardcore Trumpists, you probably won't get that kind of a cooperation. But
I did have a Republican tell me that they felt we had two Republican parties in this town right now. And, you know, the hardcore MAGAs and then just the regular Republicans that just want the town to progress. And they told me, you know, there's more of us than you think that just want to work together. And yeah. I think empowering them. And that's a big part of what Rural Organizing Initiative ROI wants to do is empower, you know, open those spaces. We do a thing that I would really encourage everybody to do. There's too much of you go to meetings, you listen to speakers, you have, you know, petition jobs or whatever. We twice a week, we open our office and we just call them open office hours. So on Wednesday night, we buy pizza, you know, we have soda, sometimes beer, and people can just come in, sit around and talk to each other. There's no criteria. There's nothing you have to do. So we call that pizza and politics. And then Sunday mornings, we do pastries and politics. And again, we just have coffee and pastries and fruit, and we're open for a set number of hours. You come in, hang out, talk to each other. And we're starting to see people from both sides of the aisle come and just talk to each other, which I think has been missing a lot. So I would encourage everybody to do that on colleges. We're going to try to start pizza and politics on college campuses. you know,
free food on college campuses is
how do you get college kids pizza and t-shirts? That's our goal.
Okay. I spoke to the Democratic Messaging Project. Joanne Lulin has made a bazillion branded Democrat branded condoms. One major message about how Democrats are preserving bodily freedom. Two,
I like that.
What do college students need? They need free food and they need condoms.
T-shirts.
What happens on T-shirts. What happens on college campuses? As much as some people don't like to admit it, yes, sex happens. Free food draws people, no matter what the topic. And, you know, a free shirt. They have to do less laundry. Always a winner. I'm really excited that you are doing that. Because, again, I think people don't understand, not through any fault of their own, but they don't see that their voice has mattered. And if we can make their voices matter and show some results from what they're doing, I think they, you know, will tell that to their friends.
You know, I want to put a little plug in right now for anybody that wants to support that work, because t-shirts, you know, cost, and we're, you know, our goal is to come up with 10,000 t-shirts across Arizona and see what kind of an effect we're going to have with that. We're starting to see in Arizona, we can track our voter registrations through the QR codes. So we're going to have some pretty solid numbers here, but we do have a website. It's roi.vote, and people can go to that and we'll have a place there that they can go and contribute if they want to help support the t-shirt and pizza project, because I think it's going to be very effective on college campuses.
Well, I encourage all of you out there to support this initiative, even if you're not from Arizona, and maybe adopt it where you are. And
do it in your own community as well. I mean, the project's there.
Absolutely. That's what I mean. And I want to ask, is there anything specifically rural about the rural organizing initiative? Or is it that you happen to be in a rural place and those are the people you're reaching?
I think it is somewhat rural. One of the things we talk about rural organizing, there's a vast difference between urban organizing and rural organizing. So it's not just that we happen to be here, because I've worked both and I understand. In urban organizing, everything is about numbers. You know, you've got 2 million people, you've got to reach a percentage of them, and it's all about numbers and contacts. In rural organizing, I worked for a campaign a few years back that wanted us to make 150 phone calls a day. And the first phone call list they gave me was 55 people long. And they still wanted me to make 150 calls a day. I'm like, I'm not calling them all three times a day. It's relational. Rural organizing is not about numbers of contacts. It's about building that relationship. And so that's where we started with the open office hours and the, you know, that kind of outreach, because it's so much more relational than urban organizing. It just is. In urban organizing, you have more media that's more effective. In rural areas, not so much, you know. And people are they're less likely to answer the door unless they know you. So you really want people in their own neighborhoods doing things. You know, it's a very different animal.
Although when you think about urban organizing, that relational model is important as well.
Oh, I mean, right? I would argue all organizing should be relational organizing.
Exactly.
But yeah, I think very much so in rural areas, just the difference it makes to knock on someone's door and say, hey, I'm Llama. I'm your neighbor from down the street. I want to make sure you know what's going on in our school board.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge, because a lot of people don't have, like, just they're just not getting the information. We're not necessarily paying attention until we have cause to pay attention, right?
That's right.
They're giving us a lot of cause to pay attention. So it's our job to get the word out so that people know this is happening. And when we do, they show up and they make their voices heard. So it really has an impact.
Is there anything that you want to tell our listeners that I haven't asked you about? Because, you know, there's so many things to talk about, but what would be the most important thing that you would want our listeners to know?
I'm going to say every vote matters. Mm-hmm. Last night, I talked to somebody who won a local campaign by one vote and served on the council. You know, like Llama said earlier, our attorney general, out of over 4 million votes, it was one vote for every four precincts was the difference, you know. So and the difference to what's going on in our state right now is dramatic compared to what the other options were. And I worked on a campaign where my candidate lost by two votes. And it's, you know, it's heartbreaking to think just three more people could have showed up. We would have changed everything. And that was in Indiana. So every vote matters, you know. Go vote, bring your friends, talk to your neighbors, you know, talk to family members. Once that opportunity opens, a lot of places you don't have to wait till election day to vote. You can vote early. You can mail in your ballot. You can usually county offices start taking walk-in votes at least 2 weeks ahead of the election. Don't wait till election day. Election day, you're going to get a flat tire. Your kid's going to be sick. Something's going to happen.
And I would just add that democracy is participatory. If we want to have a functioning democracy in this country, we need everyone to be engaged and be involved. And that means turning out and voting, because every vote really does matter. And especially in these local races where it does come down to one or two votes more often than not. And your vote could be the difference between someone who wants to ban books and someone who doesn't. So, you know, please turn out and vote.
Thank you for listening to Freedom Over Fascism. And thank you to our editor, Benji Wilson. Please join our Patreon at patreon.com/freedomoverfascism. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please drop us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. We thank you for choosing freedom over fascism.